Bob, do we have the public participants in the meeting?
Yes, they're filing in now. And Madam Chair, we are recording and broadcasting, and the floor is yours.
Thanks so much, Bob. Welcome to the March 26, 2024 teleconference meeting of the California Fish and Game Commission. Zoom webinar and phone participants have been placed on mute. When it's time for members of the public to provide comments, you will receive instructions on how to indicate you would like to speak to that agenda item. Speakers will be unmuted individually. Before we get started, our Executive Director, Melissa Miller Henson, is going to give us some technical notes.
Thank you and good morning, President Murray. Good morning, commissioners. For members of the public, if you are participating in the Zoom webinar and calling in by phone, please make sure that your phone number and your Zoom webinar are linked. If you logged into Zoom first and used the calling option, the linkage happened automatically. Note that if you're joining by phone only and wish to speak to an agenda item, staff will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. If you are having technical difficulties with the meeting, please contact IT@agpvideo.com. Again, that's IT@agpvideo.com. That's the preferred method. Or if necessary, you can call 805-801-3576. Zoom's chat feature is disabled for two-way communication, though the hosts may share information with attendees.
Terrific. Sherry, could you call roll to establish a quorum?
President Murray?
Here.
Vice President Zavaleta? Commissioner Hostler-Carmerson?
Here.
Commissioner Sklar? Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Great. So we have a quorum, and I'd like to formally call to order our meeting today. So I'm meeting here from San Diego. We're meeting remotely, but I'm here in San Diego, and I do want to acknowledge that I'm here today on ancestral traditional lands of the Kumeyaay people. I'd like to acknowledge all California Native American communities who have inhabited California lands for thousands of years and continue to do so today. We honor and respect the diverse indigenous people who are deeply connected to the fish, the wildlife, and the habitats that we manage. And we take seriously our trust relationship with these sovereign tribal governments. We do our work together with and with much respect and gratitude for those who have lived in California since time immemorial, including the Kumeyaay people. Together with the best available science that includes indigenous and traditional knowledge, we carry out the commission's mission to hold fish and wildlife and their habitats in the public trust, to enhance and restore California's native fish and wildlife in their natural habitats, and to secure a rich and sustainable outdoor heritage for all Californians. And with that, Melissa, could you introduce the Fish and Game Commission staff and department leadership that we have participating today?
Absolutely. Thank you again, President Murray. Joining us here today, of course, myself, Melissa Miller Henson, Executive Director of the California Fish and Game Commission. To my left is our legal counsel, Mike Yon. To his left is Susan Ashcraft, our marine advisor, helping escort folks to the meeting room out in the hallway is Ari Corman, our marine advisor. And then here in our room with us today, we also have two of our analysts, Jen Bacon and Kelsey Laird, as well as our Sea Grant fellow, Devin Rossi. And then joining us on Zoom, assisting us with public comment and such, is Sherry Fonbuena, another one of our analysts and also our administrative officer. From the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, our primary agency partner, we have Deputy Director for the Wildlife and Fisheries Division, Chad Dibble, representing the department. We also have Deputy Director and Chief of Law Enforcement, Nathaniel Arnold. And then joining us online, we have Dr. Craig Truman, who is the regional manager for the Marine Region. This is, for members of the public, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us. This is the 154th year of operation for the Commission in partnership with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Both of our organizations originated from a board of fish commissioners in 1870. The commission's goals include preserving our wildlife heritage and conserving our natural resources through informed decision-making. These meetings are vital in achieving those goals, and in that spirit, we provide the following information to be as effective and efficient toward that end. We are operating under the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act, and these proceedings are being recorded and broadcast. In the unlikely event of an emergency, please note the location of the nearest emergency exits at your location. Items may be heard in any order pursuant to the determination of the presiding commissioner, and today that is President Murray. The amount of time for each agenda item may be adjusted based on time available and the number of speakers. If you're in Sacramento here, speaker cards need to be filled out legibly and turned in to staff before we start the agenda item. If you are joining or planning to join in Trinidad or La Jolla, please notify the commissioner in attendance that you would like to speak. If you are online or on the phone, you will receive additional instructions in just a few minutes. We will ask how many speakers we have before taking public comment. Please be prepared and listen closely for your name or phone number to be called. When you speak, please state your name and any affiliation. Be respectful and note that disruptions will not be tolerated. Time is precious, so please be precise. To receive meeting agendas and regulatory notices about subjects of interest to you, please visit the Commission's website, www.fgc.ca.gov, and sign up for our electronic mailing list. If you want the Commission to consider a regulation change, all petitions for regulation change must be submitted in writing. Of course, there's a form for that. It's available on the Commission's website or directly from staff. And for members of the public who have internet access and are not planning to make public comment, you may listen to the meeting via our regular webcast by visiting, again, the Commission website at www.fgc.ca.gov. You'll see the link on the right-hand side of the page. A reminder to please silence your mobile devices and computers to avoid interruptions. I spoke a little bit about the webcast opportunity already. We already talked about in-person participation, submitting your speaker cards or notifying the commissioner in attendance that you would like to speak at the beginning of an agenda item. And then participating by Zoom webinar or phone. If you have chosen to participate via Zoom webinar or phone and you want to speak to an agenda item, you will be asked to raise your hand at the beginning of that item. So please listen carefully for the announcement that it is time to raise your hand, as that opportunity will be brief. And for the agenda item, the commission will take public comment in person first at the three locations and then via Zoom webinar and phone. Thank you, President Murray.
Great. I want to make sure that we have the locations of all our commissioners clear, and that we're all in the, because I think actually Commissioner Hasa Carmison might not be in Trinidad Rancheria. Oh, and we can't quite hear you, Jackie.
Good morning. My sincere apologies. I was under the assumption I could call in remotely. I was not aware that I needed to host the meeting. I'm so sorry. I should have asked. But I'm traveling. And so what's happening in Trinidad is my staff person is opening the back house, and people are able to be in the room, and she will facilitate the computer so everyone can be logged into the meeting. I'm not sure if this creates an issue for the validity of this meeting. So my sincere apologies.
Thanks so much, Jackie, or Commissioner Hasler-Carmison for flagging that. And we understand we all have many competing priorities and day jobs on top of this. So we understand. I'll look to you, Melissa, to advise us on this issue.
Can you give us just a moment, President Murray?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for your patience, President Murray. We believe that we're good to go. And thank you, Commissioner Hasler-Carmison, for ensuring that members of the public have the opportunity to join via the location in Trinidad.
Terrific. Thanks so much, everybody, for the quick thinking on that. All right,
Can we verify that she's able to get on if we can pause for one more moment and determine who's in the room? I mean, you can move forward, but I'll let you know once she's connected and have people able to announce themselves.
That sounds good. So would you, Commissioner Hustler-Carmison, would you like for us to maybe take 5 or 10 before, and then reconvene, or do you want us to proceed with the agenda?
I think it would be better to pause to ensure that the public are able to hear what's happening.
Okay, why don't we plan to take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back at about 8:50. All right, do we have everyone there? Is Sacramento still there?
Yes, can you hear us?
We can hear you. And my understanding is Trinidad Rancheria is open. We do have members of the public there. Can you hear us, Trinidad?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Wonderful. And Trinidad, were you able to hear? I'm not sure if you were connected to hear all of the meeting notes and the technical instructions. We'd love to at least know who's there and get introductions from the folks in the room.
Hi, my name is Amy Atkin-Kelly. I am the executive manager at the Trinidad Rancheria.
My name is Kenyon Hensel. I'm a commercial fisherman from Crescent City. I'm here to make comment during public comment.
And Kathleen Hensel, his wife, and commercial fisherman.
That's wonderful. Thanks for being here, and thanks for your patience with our technical difficulties on this one. We're glad to have you here. Melissa, is there anything that you feel like we need to restate before we get started on having elected officials and tribal representatives identify themselves?
I just would let Kenyon and his wife know, and I'm sorry, was that Kathy or Kathleen?
Kathleen,
thank you for confirming. Appreciate that. I just let you know that when if you do want to speak, that when we get to that agenda item, if you just let us know, we're going to go from, we're going to do all of the in-person locations. So we'll do La Jolla, Trinidad, and Sacramento, and then we'll move to the Zoom speakers. So just speak up and let us know if you want to speak to item 2 or 3, and we'll have President Murray call on you.
Just wish to speak in public comment for items not on the agenda.
We can't hear you.
They want to speak on public comment for items not on the agenda. That sounds great.
Thank you.
All right, so before we start the first agenda item, I want to ask that any elected officials and tribal council members or their representatives who want to introduce themselves, please raise your hands using the Zoom raise hand feature, or if you're on the phone, by pressing *9 one time. And when introducing yourself, please state your name, title, the tribe or district or official you represent, and tell us which agenda item or items you wish to speak on today. If you're in person, Sacramento. I don't have anyone here in La Jolla, and I don't think either of the attendees in Trinidad are elected officials or tribal representatives. But if there's anybody in person who wants to identify themselves as an elected official or a tribal council member or representative, please just approach the table and identify yourself. Is there anyone in Sacramento?
No.
Okay. And it doesn't look like we have anyone online who've identified themselves as an elected official or a tribal council member or their representative either. All right. So with that, we will start the agenda. Agenda item number one is to consider approving the agenda in the order of items. We don't have any staff recommended changes to the agenda, so I'll look to my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Hustler-Carmison and Commissioner Anderson, to see if you have any changes to the agenda.
No, President Murray, I do not. And I'm happy to make a motion when you're ready.
Okay, and I don't think we actually need a motion on this.
Okay.
So we will, actually, maybe we do need a motion on this. Yes, please, if you wouldn't mind, Commissioner Hassler-Carmison.
I'll make the motion to approve the agenda as written.
Okay, and I'll second that.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion by Commissioner Hassler-Carmison, a second by me, and Sherry, could you read the roll?
Commissioner Hassler-Carmison?
Aye.
President Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Okay, so the motion passes unanimously, and that brings us to agenda item number 2, which is recreational fishing regulations for federal ground fish. And I believe our staff lead on this is our marine advisor, Susan Ashcraft. Welcome, Susan, if you could get us started on this agenda item.
Thank you. Good morning, President Murray and commissioners.
Do you want to ask them to raise their hand?
Yes.
Yeah, but
just one moment.
Before Susan starts, just want to note again that there are several ways that the public can make comment today. If you would like to make a public comment and you're joining us in Sacramento, you need to let us know with a speaker card. If you're in Trinidad or La Jolla, please notify Commissioner Hassler-Carmison or President Murray that you'd like to speak at the beginning. Staff is going to call 2 or more speakers at a time. If you are participating via Zoom or phone, you will have approximately 3 minutes to raise your hand. If you'd like to speak on item 2, recreational fishing regulations for federal ground fish, please raise your hand no later than 8:58. If you're on Zoom webinar, that raise hand button is one of the apps there. If you are on your computer, the button is at the bottom of the window and also at the bottom of the participant list. On the mobile app, the raise hand is located at the bottom of the screen. If you're on the phone only and wish to raise your hand, press *9 once to alert us that you would like to speak. If you press *9 a second time, you will take yourself out of the queue. So please only press it once. And when your name is called, you may need to unmute yourself to speak by pressing *6. Or you can use the unmute button on Zoom. Once you raise your hand, please do not lower it. Staff will collect the names of all participants who have their hands raised. And once that information is collected, they will lower all hands at one time. Staff will then call names from the list. So please listen carefully for your name to be called. Again, if you are on Zoom and you would like to provide comment on item 2, recreational fishing regulations for federal ground fish, please raise your hand by 8:58 and leave it raised. For each agenda item, we will begin with public commenters in person, then move to commenters on Zoom, webinar, or phone. Susan, thank you.
Thank you. All right. The purpose of this agenda item is to consider adopting proposed amendments to regulations regarding recreational fishing for federal ground fish in state waters for consistency with federal rules in 2024, and to adopt recreational ground fish seasons, bag limits, and depth limits. By way of background, regulatory authority for ground fish stocks is shared jointly between state and federal governments, and the commission routinely adopts recreational fishing regulations for federal ground fish in state waters after the Pacific Fishery Management Council takes action to action, and the purpose is to ensure state consistency with federal regulations. The Pacific Fishery Management Council did take its final action at the March 5th through 11th meeting to adopt recommendations for in-season changes to recreational ground fish regulations that are effective for the 2024 season. And based on the council's recommendations, federal ground fish fishery regulations are expected to be published by early April 2024. That requires changes to several state regulations to maintain consistency with and complement the new federal regulations in state waters. In light of the timing for the effective date at the federal level, today's adoption hearing is scheduled by a teleconference to best align with that timeline. The department recommendations and the detailed the rulemaking materials are in your binder. In addition, there were several public comments that are summarized in your meeting materials. Today, The department will give a presentation. Marcia Remco is the state federal marine fisheries program manager, and she is joining us via Zoom.
Good morning, President Murray and commissioners. I'm Marcia Remco of the department's Marine Region and also one of the director's designees to the Pacific Fishery Management Council. Today, I'll be providing you a summary of the proposed amendments to Title 14 for recreational groundfish regulations for 2024 for consistency with federal regulations and to complement them. Next slide, please. First, just a bit more context. The Pacific Fishery Management Council recommended recreational fishing season dates, depths, and bag limit regulations for federally managed groundfish species for 2024 at its March 5th through 11th meeting. Those federal regulations that were recommended by the council are expected to be effective by the National Marine Fisheries Service in early April. The proposed changes to Title 14 are necessary for consistency with and to complement the upcoming federal regulations for these species in state waters. Groundfish regulations are typically adopted on a biennial cycle. However, adjustments are made in season when necessary to keep fisheries within established limits, or in other cases, to increase harvest opportunities when catch and bycatch are tracking below projections. The regulations in place currently for 2023 and 2024, the biennial period, were not successful last year in constraining catches of quillback rockfish to the federally established harvest limits for this species off California in 2023. That required a series of in-season closures for both sport and commercial fisheries for much of California. Consequently, significant changes to the 2024 regulations are needed to avoid exceeding the limits that are effective for 2024. The Pacific Fishery Management Council recommended recreational fishing season depths, dates, and bag limit regulations for these species at its meeting earlier this month. As we've explained, that requires amendment of several state regulations to maintain consistency with and to complement these new upcoming federal regulations in state waters. The ISOR that is available in your binder and was provided in advance of the February Commission discussion hearing contained a proposed range of season dates and depth boundary regulation options, which were expected to encompass the range of options under consideration by the council at the March meeting. Now that the council has taken action, we've provided you with the final suite of proposed season dates and depth constraints and bag limits in the PSOAR document. And we're proposing the commission consider adopting those new regulations today. Next slide, please. So this is a map of the groundfish management areas. You'll see five of them: Northern Mendocino, San Francisco, Central, north of Point Lopez, Central, south of Point Lopez, and Southern. These management areas allow for differing seasons, depths, and other regulations as necessary to address area-specific needs. I want to focus in on the central area on the map. Traditionally, this has just been known as the central groundfish management area, which extends from Pigeon Point to Point Conception. At the March Council meeting, Action was taken to draw a line to cut this central area in half. The line that you see there, the dotted line at Point Lopez, 36 degrees north latitude. That line allows us to establish different regulations and different limits, depths, et cetera, north and south of Point Lopez. So that's new in this upcoming action that we're proposing for today. The area south of 36 has almost no encounters with quillback rockfish. So regulations aren't necessary in this area to reduce encounters with quillback, unlike the remainder of the area to the north. The proposed action today does include adopting the management line that was recently approved by the council at the 36 degree line to allow for consistent and complementary season dates and depth limits with those in the federal regulations that are expected in early April. Next slide, please. As part of an emergency department rulemaking that was undertaken earlier this year, Section 35.00 was added to Title 14 of state regulations that defines a 20-fathom boundary line using a series of connecting waypoints along the mainland coast and offshore islands. That action took effect February 12th. This new 20-fathom boundary line allows for clear, enforceable regulations to be used by both industry and enforcement to define allowable fishing areas for nearshore-only fishing activity. So that's a new boundary line that we have not ever had before that was developed by the department with a public review period and now allows for a very clear, bright line between where fishing can occur inside of 20 and where it cannot. The boundary line falls entirely in state waters and was broadly supported by the public to allow access for shallow nearshore water species to allow for continued fishing opportunity while largely avoiding quillback rockfish. On the screen, we have a visual table representing the recreational fishing seasons and dates for each of the groundfish management areas. So corresponding to the map in the last screen, up in the north and Mendocino, San Francisco, and down to that northern half of the central area, down to Point Lopez, you'll see that the proposed season structures are the same for all of those areas in the north. And that again, was needed to minimize impacts to quillback rockfish in response to a need to change regulations to better achieve the established federal harvest limit for quillback. So for these areas, you'll see that the months of May through September, the fishery is proposed to be open shoreward of that new 20-fathom boundary line in state waters. So what's proposed is that in this time period of May through September, all species of rockfish, other than those that are prohibited, lingcod, cabezon, and greenlings are authorized for take and possession shoreward of that new 20-fathom boundary line. Notably, during the times that the shoreward of the 20-fathom fishery is open in state waters under the proposed state regulations, the federal regulations that will take effect shortly will indicate that the fishery is closed in federal waters. So what you'll see in the federal regulations is that the areas that are open, fishing will be authorized in the offshore only fisheries in the months of April, October, and December. Again, this is for the northern part of the state, for the northern Mendocino, San Francisco, groundfish management areas, and the northern half of the central groundfish management area. So turning to the southern part of the state, which now is defined as the central area south of Lopez Point down to Point Conception, and then the southern area, which is Point Conception down to the U.S.-Mexico border, the fishery will be comprised of three-month time blocks. The first time block is April through June and offers all depth opportunity for all species. The second time block is July through September and offers opportunity shoreward of the 50-fathom boundary line for all species. The last time block is October through December and offers offshore-only opportunity seaward of the 50-fathom boundary, with the same species authorizations as described earlier for the offshore-only fisheries in the northern areas. Next slide, please. Rockfish, cabezon, and greenlings are managed with an aggregate 10 fish daily limit called the rockfish, cabezon, greenling limit. And within that 10 fish limit, there are sublimits applied to certain species as needed. Quillback rockfish, as well as yellow-eye rockfish and cowcod and bronze-bodied rockfish remain prohibited statewide in the proposed regulatory action today. Catches of vermilion rockfish, I want to spend some time on that topic, continue to exceed federally established harvest limits for the area south of 4010 north latitude. What that means is that we need to reduce catches in 2024 to keep our catch within that federally established limit. This was a big topic of discussion over the winter as we finalized our catch estimates for 2023 and again found that we had exceeded the vermilion contribution to the minor shelf rockfish limit. The Pacific Council's Groundfish Advisory Subpanel, or GAP as it's known, recommended and the council took action to reduce the bag limit for vermilion rockfish in waters of the groundfish management areas south of 4010 latitude from 4 fish to 2 fish. The vermilion limit in waters of the northern GMA remains at 4 fish, and that's because that area is operating under a different set of limits that are shared with Oregon. Next slide, please. In response to public requests and statewide interest in minimizing barotrauma mortality to rockfish that are released, a new requirement that a descending device capable of returning rockfish to the depth taken must be aboard any California recreational fishing vessel that is fishing for rockfish and that it be returned to the depth taken. The regulations would universally require the device be aboard when fishing for or possessing any species of federal groundfish. Next slide, please. And then also the proposed package includes a number of, we'll call them regulatory cleanups. First, the repeal of the Calcod conservation areas and the replacement with groundfish exclusion areas. This was a change to federal regulations that took effect January 1st of 2024, which repealed the large Calcod conservation area and replaced the area with a series of smaller closed areas called groundfish exclusion areas. More than 4,200 square miles of fishing ground will reopen after more than 20 years of closure. The repeal is directly connected to the Calcod stock being declared rebuilt in 2019 and the large special closure area for Calcod is no longer necessary. The new groundfish exclusion areas are specifically designed to protect sensitive and abundant coral and sponge aggregations that are documented in these areas. Another cleanup item pertains to transiting and anchoring and drifting. The proposed modifications would continue to allow anchoring and drifting in addition to transiting in a closed area, and would maintain the provision that allows hoop nets, crab traps, and dip nets as specified within closed areas shoreward of an offshore-only boundary, while groundfish legally taken in the offshore fishery are aboard. These provisions are proposed to be included to ensure fishing opportunity for other species are not impacted by a near-shore fishery closure. And then other edits for clarity, consistency, and minor corrections. Next slide, please. I'd like to just take a second to offer some special thanks to folks that have been participating actively with us in the Pacific Council arena. Just wanted to highlight that the proposed regulations that you have in front of you are actually regulations that were proposed by members of industry themselves. There was significant involvement over winter working together to make difficult compromises. Ultimately, what's in front of you, the recommendations that are offered by the industry were developed with the goal of maximizing opportunity in each of the areas, given all of the constraints that we're working with. I'd also like to acknowledge the broad industry support and outreach that is ongoing with regard to the proposed descending device requirement. A few folks I'd like to thank specifically and convey how much we appreciate their efforts, both to solicit input from their relative sectors, as well as to work alongside us in developing the regulations. Paul Chang, very active in the kayaking community and undertook a comprehensive survey of kayak constituents. Dave Kishida from the private recreational sector that spent a lot of time canvassing input from private recreational anglers. The team of folks from Sport Fishing Association of California, Merritt McCray, Jamie Diamond, Donna Kalez. Also from the South, we've had a lot of input from GAP member Louis Zim, and also want to acknowledge the work in the North from the Northern CPFV fleet, Tim Clausen, the GAP representative, and his work, Wayne Kotow, and his efforts to engage with the public. And also want to thank the leadership from Del Norte County, who joined us in Fresno last week and offered a lot of testimony that was helpful to the council. So with that, thank you and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks so much, Marcy. Really helpful, super comprehensive presentation. I know it's been an enormous amount of work for folks at the council, all the folks you mentioned, and for you too. So really appreciate all the time and effort you've put into this package that we're talking about. I was reading through some of the public comments and just had one clarifying question. So it seems like there's quite a lot of support for the descending devices, and we've heard that at our previous meetings as well. I know there was one question about whether the new regs would accommodate DIY descending devices that are promoted by other state departments. And it sounds like that is possible. The requirement just says boat-based anglers that they need to possess descending devices and have it available for immediate use. And it has to be capable of returning to the depth the fish was taken from, but it doesn't actually define what it is other than those terms. Do I have that right, Marcy?
Yes, President Murray, you do. And in fact, we are working hard on some new outreach content to actually aid anglers in making their own descending devices that serve the purpose and how fish would be deployed and released using those devices. There, of course, are all kinds of varieties of descending devices on the market, but we recognize that not everyone wants to go buy one, and folks certainly have the ability to make one themselves. So you got it right. The goal is to just require that they have one available on the vessel and ready for use if needed. And you know, what form that descending device takes is kind of up to them. So thank you.
Thanks, Marcy. And it doesn't actually say, though, that they need to use it. It just needs to be available and ready for use. Is that right?
The intent is that a device be available, capable of returning the rockfish to the depth taken, be aboard the vessel. We hope that they will use it. We encourage folks to use it. In terms of actually mandating that they use it, I think we've been working with enforcement on the language that is going to be most effective for them in practice in the field.
Great. Thanks for that, Mercy. Before we go to public comment, I want to see if Commissioner Hassler-Karmason or Commissioner Anderson have any questions or comments.
Thank you, President.
Yeah.
Thank you, President Murray. I'm going to hold any comments until after public comment, but I do want to thank Marcy for all of her work. I know how hard she works, and it's a big job following everything she does at PFMC. So thank you, Marcy, for the great report.
Thanks, Commissioner Hassler-Karmason. And Commissioner Anderson, any comments or questions from you?
No, Madam Chair.
Terrific. All right, so with that, I'll go first to Trinidad Rancheria and see if you have any speakers in the room who want to speak on this agenda item number two.
Good morning. Yes, we do have one public speaker.
Okay. And then do we have any in Sacramento?
Yes.
We do. How many do we have in Sacramento?
We have one. Just one. Sorry.
Just
I
one.
Apologize. Just
That's okay. Okay. And then Sherry, how many do we have online?
We have five who raised their hand during while the queue was open.
Okay, great. So Sherry, I'm going to ask you to take us through our public comments. And I know this is a big deal and a lot of folks have been watching this. So I'd like to give everyone 3 minutes to speak about this.
The speaker in Trinidad, go ahead, please.
Okay, first of all, I want you to understand that I'm commenting on a separate issue other than the sport season regulations. I wish to make public comment in open comment on something that the commission may be able to have an agenda item at another time.
Okay, then we'll hold until agenda item number three for your comment then. Thanks for flagging that for us.
Will Wayne Blicka in Sacramento?
I'm
not sure where you're speaking from, right, but yes.
Great. All right. Good morning, commissioners. I want to thank you. My name is Wayne Blicka. I am the owner operator of the Flying Fish Sport Fishing that operates out of Morro Bay and Avila Beach or Port St. Louis. I'm also representing Moore Bay Landing, Port, Patriot Sport Fishing, and the Port San Luis Sport Launch in this. My purpose of being here is to share the economic impact that we sustained or that we expect to sustain from this proposed regulations. The regulations that are posted are virtually the same as we had for last season. And the last 3 months of the year were pretty devastating for us. Across the board in Morro Bay, Port San Luis, and with the Port San Luis Sport Launch, that they launched private boats, a 50% decline in business during that point in time. And that's mostly because of the fishermen. They don't want to fish the depth, the offshore part of that. They don't want to go the longboat ride. So it really discourages a lot of the people from doing this activity. So that's phase one of my statement here. The other part I want to say is that the requirement to fish outside 50 fathoms and catch two Vermilion rockfish is just, it's absurd, really is. The populations of Vermilion rockfish outside 50 fathoms are abundant, so abundant that we have to drive away, try to avoid them. It requires us, we have two descending devices on our vessel and they are in constant use, and trying to find other species of rockfish has been a big challenge. My recommendation and the recommendation from the people I'm representing are to say, if you can give us the last 3 months at 20 fathoms or less in our area, we would be much happier with that than the 50 fathoms or greater. And I've talked to several of the other operators and these operations, and they're all in support of that. So let's see, the economic impact, getting back to that, we have several people in our industry that have already quit their jobs. I think of five different captains, long-term captains, that are doing other work now. And one captain actually sold his vessel. So we are looking at a possible economic collapse in our area, as we don't have other fisheries to subsist off of. So if I have any other time, or that's all we got. Looks like I'm done. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our first Zoom speaker will be Wayne Cotto, followed by Captain Smitty. Wayne Cotto, go ahead, please.
Good morning, President Murray, Commissioners, staff. Wayne Cotto with Coastal Conservation Association of California, representing the recreational angling community. Thank you to CDFW, GMT, and GAP at the PFMC for reaching out to offer scenarios to help fix last year's unintended consequences of management actions. While we can debate on how we got here, it's relevant now. Unfortunately, we can't win. No matter what decisions are made, someone's going to lose and be upset. We had to choose the least worst option presented to us. We hope to stop the reactionary management practices and blaming anglers for going over harvest guidelines while staying within regulations set for them. We look for opportunities to enjoy our favorite sport of fishing. As normal recreational angler, they have no idea what goes on behind the scenes to balance conservation and management. They're frustrated and don't understand why the claims being made don't match the reality of what we see on the water. If we don't get this right soon, it won't matter, as the communities and industries will fail, and efforts will shift elsewhere and not return. From commercial perspective, it's getting too hard and not profitable. Frustration is turning into desperation, as you just heard. From the recreational perspective, the fun is being removed, and we all need to do better. Recreational anglers spend $3.4 billion in fishing in California. There's nothing we can do to change the decision that's going to be made today, but we are trying to be proactive in fixing the issues plaguing our current practices, procedures, and methodologies, and modeling. We filed a petition to carry the descending devices for California, as it will help our future efforts. We are finding alternate ways to help collect missing data like age and spawning for certain species with our partners, and working to allocate more money to help with scientific data needs. We are educating the public on how complex this process is and why we need to all help. We all need to find the choke points that are hindering our efforts for success and setting the right priorities that are going to have the largest benefits that are always extremely important. Let's be careful that we don't have more unintended consequences from more restricted fishing access as we limit our bags and our access. The effort will shift somewhere else, and we will be in the same scenario again, just with a different species. How do we help you to help us has been our theme for years now and is even more important now than ever. While we're not happy, we have to agree and accept this option, which includes a decreased bag limit of $1 million down to $2 million. And we thank CDFW, especially Marcy and Caroline, to GMT and the GAP for their work on our behalf. We also thank all who helped us open the Calcott Conservation Area after 20-year closure. We look forward to increased communications and improved efforts going forward. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Captain Smitty. He'll be followed by Chris Howard. Captain Smitty, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ahoy. I'm Captain Smitty, the vessel Riptide, CPFV Riptide out of Half Moon Bay. I'm here speaking in regards to the other captains and CPVs. This has been a very difficult time in our fisheries with both the closures of the salmon and groundfish. I mean, the business in Half Moon Bay has been absolutely devastating, and our harbor is on the verge of collapse. Absolutely. In regards to the descending devices, we absolutely stand behind the use of descending devices here. They can be anything from a barbless hook turned upside down to the barometric devices that we use for descending fish. I think my main question here is in regards to the season opening. The PFMC has approved rec season starting on April 1st, but that can't happen here in state waters until the season proposal has gone through you. And I believe my question is, does it also have to be published in title CFR Title 14? If indeed that is the case, then as a CPFV and representing the other businesses that operate that way, we are trying to figure out what is going to be the quote unquote opening date for the fishery so we can start booking business. I have started booking business as of the first, because I thought the first was the opening of the fishery season. But after attending the state meeting last night for the salmon, we were told that no, that's not the case. So as I said, I have business on the weekend and a couple weekday trips for rockfish here. So I'm looking for clarification for the fisheries here, so we would know what date the actual date that we can start booking business and that the public can start prosecuting the fish. Thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to your response.
Chris Howard, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Chris Howard, and I'd like to say good morning to the fellow commissioners here in the audience today. I'm a representative with Del Norte County, and many of you know me from chasing you around the state over the last couple months, specific to this closure due to quillback. Although we can't disagree with many of the comments given during public comment this morning, and the public comment we've made through written testimony, we understand the very complex set of issues that have been given to the state of California through the Pacific Marine Fisheries Management Council that we have to navigate through these closures. I want to recognize today the efforts of our Department of Fish and Game staff, particularly Marcy and those folks that helped get this heavy lift over the line and navigate those issues. It's been a long several months to get to this point in time, and I believe now we have a fair and representative balance that allows us to restart our economies here in rural California that was particularly hammered by this closure. We did lose a lot of business. It is reflected quite heavily economically within our TOT and sales taxes, but We believe the state in particular worked very quickly to resolve the issues that were presented by this closure. And want to thank you today and say Delnar County is very supportive of what you are considering before you. Thank you.
Next speaker will be Merritt McRae, followed by Weston Rhodes. Merritt McRae, go ahead, please.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great, that sounds great. President Murray, commissioners and staff, I am Pearson, the Pacific Fisheries Management Council Groundfish Advisory Subpanel member Merritt McRae. We support the recreational item before you as presented by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This package was challenging for public and agency representatives to develop. It optimizes public access while providing for needed conservation. It projects to keep the state below federal annual catch limits on vermilion, copper, and quillback rockfish, and coordinates with commercial fisheries management already in place. Conservation measures for these three rockfish stocks constrain access to many other healthy groundfish stocks. New restrictions are painful but necessary to both avoid quillback and reduce vermilion and copper catch while optimizing the resultant limited access to healthy co-occurring rockfish. Reopening most of the 4,300 square miles of the Cowcod Conservation Area to public access after over two decades of closure was coordinated with Oceana, whose representatives carried this proposal forward in the federal process. The proposal also includes durable protections for eight large areas where deepwater corals and sponges are known to exist. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Our next speaker is Weston Rhodes, who will be followed by Paul Chang. Weston Rhodes, go ahead, please.
Good morning. I just want to tell you guys, thank you very much for hearing everybody's public comment. I'm here in support of Wayne Blicka's recommendation that the last 3 months in the South Central Management Region that we are allowed to fish under 20 fathoms. It would reduce the amount of vermilion bycatch that we will encounter. And as stated, there is no quillback occurrence happening in our region. I know the copper is a concern, but if we're fishing under 20 fathoms, the occurrence of those will also be reduced, and also they would be more easily released in the water using the descending device compared to the amount of vermilion bycatch we would have in the over 50 fathom region during that last 3 months. So I think you guys should consider what he's talking about. And I'd also like to also extremely express my concern for the economic impact, not only for the fishermen working in the area, but also for the tackle stores and other businesses that make money from this industry. There's going to be plenty of shops that are going to be going out of business because it's pretty plain and simple that a kayak's not going to be able to make it out to 50 fathoms during that last part of the season, especially in our area. Anyway, thank you very much for hearing what we have to say. That's all I have.
Paul Chang, go ahead, please.
Thank you, President Murray and the member of the commission. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name is Paul Chang. And non-motorized vessel petition work group member. First, I appreciate all the CDF staff working so hard, try to get this in-season regulation change, especially Dr. Craig Schumann and James Phillips. After watching entire process and participating, now I understand why our regulation is so complicated and require a PhD to understand. Second, appreciate the requiring the descending device, which was a part of our petition. And one of our work group member, Mark Lockerbie, donated 100 descending devices, and we started distributing them to kayak angler for free. Finally, the proposed regulation provided 12-month season for shore anglers and 9-month season to power boaters, and only provided 6-month season for kayak angler, which is a near shore, less than 20 fathom line restriction. I do understand CDF staff are very busy that we agreed to their process, but hopefully CDF can review our petition and hopefully we'll able to get the exception to provide able to fish similar to 9-month season. If you do direct interpolation between the shore angler and power boater, I think kayak fits in between. We should get about 10 and a half months, but we are not asking that much. We are only asking 9-month season. And hopefully we can continue to communicate with the CDF staff and the Fish and Game Commission staff and work out this difference and say able to come up with a better regulation for upcoming seasons. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Larry Phillips, who will be followed by Jeff Schester. Larry Phillips, go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Good morning, President Murray, members of the commission and staff. Larry Phillips, American Sport Fishing Association. As many others have said here, we really appreciate the CDFW team, Marcy, Caroline, and staff for just turning over every rock here and trying to find every bit of opportunity in a very challenging time. So appreciate that. The recreational community has a long history of advocacy for good science, supporting management measures as necessary. The challenge for us is quillback is one of several nearshore species that are managed in this historically managed as a complex. And they're very important to the recreational fishing community. Through the council process, they're managed using a fishery-dependent data moderate approach. And this is different than many of the other species that are managed using a fishery independent, which gives us an index of abundance. The 2021 quillback assessment estimated the biomass at about 14% of unfished, so significantly depleted. But unfortunately, proxy data from fisheries in Washington, Oregon were used to define age and growth. And also many pre-specified management, the process pre-specified many of the management parameters that were used in the population dynamics model. In addition, in 2023, CDFW's port site sampling estimated that 28% of the remaining 14% biomass was depleted. And this is a very difficult part of the process to understand. This suggests that they were disproportionately harvested from other species within the same complex, and also that somehow, despite the fact that a significant portion of the coast is either closed to fishing through the MPA or RCA process, or just too far from ports, making them functionally closed, still allowed for the public to fishers to remove, reduce that additional 28%. Just candidly speaking, we understand the optics of the industry not liking the outcome of an assessment. Everyone that's been involved in this process through the assessment process believes that we can do better. Unfortunately, the process under the prescriptive process under PFMC is very regimented and doesn't provide us an opportunity. So we have two asks today. One of the asks is that we collectively advocate for additional resources so that we can conduct fisheries independent assessment of our nearshore rockfish. And that's from Washington all the way to California. This is not unique to just to California. And then the other part of this is we absolutely support the use of mandatory use of descending devices, not rigged and ready, but attempting mandatory use of descending devices. And we just believe that is a lead by example approach. As always, I appreciate the commission's time and the agency staff. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Our final speaker is Jeff Schester. Please go ahead.
Thank you, President Murray and members of the commission. My name is Jeff Schester, representing the conservation organization Oceana. Wanted to largely echo many of the sentiments and commend the recreational sport fishing community for their testimony and efforts today. In particular, we wanted to voice our support for the use of descending devices, as well as both in terms of the discussion that Ms. Yaremko described in terms of the current regulations, as well as the petition put forward by CCA Cal and others to have mandatory descending devices to reduce mortality. We also wanted to commend the recreational fishing community for their collaborative work, along with our organization and others, to find a way to reopen the Calcod Conservation Area. This is a really big deal that reopens fishing opportunities that have been closed for many years, while at the same time putting in new protections for deep sea corals and sponges on the seafloor. That was widely supported as a consensus effort. And then lastly, we wanted to really just voice our support for groups working together to support the improved data collection and prioritization of data collection for these nearshore groundfish stocks, particularly as the previous speaker said, with fishery independent data. And largely, some of this data already is out there, and some of it could be collected by small changes to existing sampling protocols. And this could really go a long way towards reducing the uncertainty in future assessments, as these nearshore groundfish stocks that have been managed in a complex are extremely important. Some of them are sensitive, and I think the management process and the fishing community would benefit from more improved data on these stocks. And lastly, just wanted to commend the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, particularly Ms. Yaremko and her staff, for all their efforts at the Pacific Fishery Management Council to try to find a way forward through these challenges while improving the science, preventing overfishing, and protecting our fishing communities as well. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment today.
That concludes our public speakers on this item.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. I'd love to hear from my fellow commissioners if they have any thoughts or any responses, any discussion before we go to a motion. But before we do that, I did have a clarifying question. I don't know if this is for Marcy. I think maybe we can start and see if Marcy knows the answer. But one of the speakers, Captain Smitty, he raised a question about do we have anything specific about what the opening date will be so that, you know, CPFEs can start booking business? He thought it was going to be April 1st, but maybe won't be. And so I just wanted to see if there's any clarification or assurance we can provide for Captain Smitty and others.
Yes. Thank you, President Murray, for the question. As described, we have two different regulatory packages that are kind of governing the same content here. There's the federal in-season rule that we expect to publish and take effect early April. And then your action that we will be expediting and doing everything we can to get over to the Office of Administrative Law in a short time. We've already kind of prepared for requesting an expedited review and effectiveness on filing. Our expected timeline for both packages, we're hoping early April for effectiveness. The current regulations that are on the books don't open many of the areas until later in May. However, every area under the new proposed regulations for 2024 would have an opener in April. Exactly when the effectiveness of that April opener is depends on the date that the regulations become effective. The federal regulations may come first, and they would open, well, both sets of regulations would open in the north, waters that are offshore only, in the month of April. In the south, the southern area will open April 1, under existing rules. It's that south central area that we need to wait for rules to take effect, and these would be federal rules and state rules, that would authorize fishing in the month of April in the all depth area. So I'm not sure that really answers the question, other than to say we're doing the best we can to get regs effective as quickly as we can. But in all cases, the plan is to open fisheries earlier in 2024 than what is provided under the current suite of the 23-24 biennial specs and the regs that are on the books today. I'd also add that in all cases, in every area along the state, we worked really hard to provide as much opportunity in terms of the season length, acknowledging that it doesn't mean that everybody gets to fish in every area that they want to fish throughout the entirety of the year. That's why you see these variations between near shore only and then the offshore only provisions for waters deeper than 50. And so essentially we're moving the fleets around, giving everybody as much of what we can possibly provide within the existing limits. But in total, all areas are looking at 9 months of opportunity. So hopefully that helps. You know, as soon as the regs take effect, and we will be updating our website with the most up-to-date information on the effectiveness of the rules.
Great. Yeah, that's helpful. I understand, you know, some of this is an Office of Administrative Law issue, and we can't predict how quickly that process will work its way through, but we will try to expedite it. So thanks very much for that. Yes.
If I might add to that, just thank you to Marcy for that additional information. And so your staff has been working with department staff to prep the materials and have them pretty much ready to go as quickly as possible. And our staff have been in communication with the Office of Administrative Law to give them the heads up many, many weeks ago that this was probably going to be coming and the dates that they could anticipate it. So your program manager, David Pissell, is working directly with the attorneys over at the Office of Administrative Law to try and get this process as quickly as possible.
That's great. Thanks, Melissa. Commissioner Hassel-Carmason, any thoughts on this agenda item before we go to a motion?
Thank you, President Murray. I'm just very pleased with the collaboration. This is a really tough situation for our recreational fishermen. They have been part of the solution, working with the department heavily, I can tell. I really appreciated Paul Chang's comment about realizing how complicated the process was. That was extremely good to hear that he followed that whole process. Recognizing Supervisor Chris Howard, who's followed this issue. And then also just, you know, the comment that with a few changes, data collection could be improved and it could make a difference. I think advocating at PFMC for California is super important. And just overall want to recognize the department's hard work as well as all the stakeholders.
Great, thanks, Commissioner. Commissioner Anderson, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a quick question because both Wayne, Larry, and Jeff brought up the descending equipment. Could somebody from the department sort of explain to me where we are and have we looked at anything in that area? And if so, do we evaluate, you know, the impact of cost on, you know, those fishermen that maybe do not have the same means as other commercial fishermen?
Yeah, I'll turn to Marcy and Craig, let them go first. They've done the most research on this.
Yes, descending devices have been a tool that has been in use in West Coast recreational fisheries now for, I'm going to guess, a good decade, with the idea being that if you release the fish back down at depth, it minimizes the effects of barotrauma. Because the fish are unable to, in many cases, swim back down by themselves. There's quite a bit of science demonstrating that getting the fish back to depth does aid substantially in survival. That varies by the species of rockfish and by the depth from which they were taken. So the descending device tool has been in play, again, in West Coast fisheries and also California fisheries for a number of years on a voluntary basis, where vessels use the device, particularly with rockfish species that are sensitive. And we've been collecting data on the use of descending devices in our recreational fisheries now for some time. There are a number of different types of devices that are available both for purchase, but also that can be made very easily, inverting a milk crate, taking a coat hanger and bending it in certain ways. So there are some very both inexpensive and effective methods for creating your own descending device. We are in the process now of creating some outreach materials to help anglers that are interested in making their own on how they might go about doing that. The requirement that a descending device be aboard will be new, but I will say that in most cases, and as the testimony suggests here today, they're already widely in use. The department also partners with Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. They've actually purchased some descending devices over the years, and we've made them available for distribution via our dockside samplers and our recreational survey program. So this isn't, I'd say, a new tool that will be just all of a sudden deployed as a requirement. There've been a number of years that folks have learned how to use them effectively. And again, those efforts are paying off, and now is just kind of the next step in terms of requiring that a descending device be aboard.
And Chief, I had a question from a policing standpoint. You know, what are the wardens think about this when you're looking at policing something like this? If it's voluntary today, but if we go to mandatory, how would they end up doing that?
Yeah, let me, I think we have Assistant Chief Cord, who's over our Marine Enforcement Division. He's in the Zoom lane. Eric, are you out there? And he might have to raise his hand to be let in. He'd be the best person to answer the question.
Yeah, Chief, can you hear me?
Yep, I got you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So it's, you know, defining legally what a descending device is a bit of a challenge. I think if, you know, we find that just having one in possession is not, you know, is not doing the job of getting fishermen to release these fish at the depth of capture, we're probably going to need to go back to the drawing board and draft something that's going to be, you know, a little bit more usable in the field for our officers to cite people who aren't actively using it. So I think this is just the first step, and we can kind of modify regulations going forward if we're not, you know, finding a lot of success with this first step.
And, you know, I've heard it, you know, from three different people today, and I think that we should consider it. I think, obviously, working with the commercial fishermen and getting their input along with the enforcement agency and your, you know, wardens, I think is very important. But if we know that this actually works as a tool for preservation and helping the species, I think we should move and look at what we need to do as quickly as we possibly can, because ambiguity is not good for anybody. It's not good for Chief. And it's not good for the fishermen.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's just, it's one of those moments where it's a, the tool is here. Now it's just figuring out what's the best methodologies to employ that, you know, with a obviously a robust education and enforcement component with it.
Great, thank you.
And if I might add to your question about the cost, as Marcy mentioned, you know, you can do something as simple as a handmade to, you know, if there's some pretty fancy, expensive ones out there. The economic analysis that the department's economists produced for us indicate that the descending device costs can range from around $4 for a handmade device up to the really nice, expensive ones can be up to $60.
Coming from the child of a cop, Clarity with regard to this is very important. You know, how somebody interprets, you know, their piece of equipment may be different across the board. And I don't know how you do that in statute. From the standpoint, you can use coat hangers and bobby pins and, you know, whatever else. I just think these guys in the field need assistance. They need clarity. And if it's working, we should go ahead and give them clarity and listen to the fishermen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Commissioner. So I just want to acknowledge, you know, that there is an economic and a social impact of these actions, as we've heard from the public comments today. And it's very real. And it's, I don't think it's what any of us want in an ideal world. That said, at this point, we really are required to make changes to several state regulations to maintain consistency with and to complement the new federal regulations in state waters that are already underway. So it's a different situation from what we usually find ourselves in, or often find ourselves in, and that the stock assessments are being conducted by NIMS, you know, a federal agency, their scientific staff, using data collected from both staff and or both state and federal surveys and fishery monitoring efforts. And so it's really you know, the feds who are determining how healthy the population is for a given species in a specific geographic area, and the Pacific Fishery Management Council, you know, reviews and approves these assessments, uses them to recommend harvest limits to NIMS. I know there is a lot of public input in that process, and there's review by scientific and fishing industry advisory bodies. It's a little bit different from our commission process, but still certainly includes significant public input. And my understanding is that folks did look at several options. And, you know, Wayne Cotto sort of alluded to this, that this is the option that folks felt like gave everyone at least a little bit of what they wanted. And, it, you know, it might not be perfect, but it's a pretty good compromise. And we heard several folks on the line who had been following the process say that they saw that it was inclusive and thoughtful and deliberate and really science-driven, while also listening to the needs of anglers, of fishermen. So, for me, you know, I'm prepared to entertain a motion. This makes sense to me. And again, it might not be the ideal scenario. The social and economic impacts are real, but based on what we know about the scientific consensus on copper rockfish and the high catches of vermilion rockfish over the last decade or so, I think this is something we really do need to move forward with. So having said that, I'm prepared to entertain a motion if someone would like to make one.
I'll make the motion that the commission adopts the proposed changes to section 27.20 et al. Related to Pren A, recreational fishing for federal ground fish in state waters for consistency with federal rules in 2024, and Pren B, recreational ground fish seasons, bag and depth limits.
And I'll second. So we have a motion by Commissioner Hostler-Karmason, a second by President Murray. Sherry, could you read the roll call?
Commissioner Hostler-Karmason?
Aye.
President Murray?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
So the motion passes unanimously. Thanks, everybody. And that takes us to our final agenda item of the day, which is agenda item number 3, general public comment. And this is where we receive public comments on topics that are within our authority that are not included on the agenda. And just to remind folks that we are not able to discuss or take action on any matter raised during this item, except to decide whether to place the matter on the agenda of a future meeting. So do we have anyone in Trinidad Rancheria who would like to speak on this? I know we have at least one. How many do we have total?
It's just me. Just one.
All right. And we have no one here in La Jolla. In Sacramento, how many folks do we have who would like to speak on this agenda item?
Zero.
Zero. And I neglected to ask people to raise their hand on Zoom. So if you could do that now, you've got a couple minutes to raise your hand and make yourself known to speak on this public comment, open public comment period, agenda item number 3. Why don't we start by going to our speaker in Trinidad.
Hello, my name is Kenyon Hensel. I've been a commercial fisherman out of Crescent City for over 40 years. I've spent thousands of days on the water. I've spent tens of thousands of hours fishing. I fished every day. The water was decent for those over 40 years. I've caught over 1 million pounds of rockfish. I've fished predominantly in nearshore waters. And the fact that you changed the commercial fishing regulations to disallow open access to fish in state waters is going to affect me profoundly. When I, in 2019, I had a heart attack. And during my recovery, it was unsure whether I would fish again or if I would even live. And I unfortunately sold my deeper near shore permit at that time to help cover the costs and the continuance of my life at that time. What I would like to ask the commission, I've come here today to ask the commission if they would consider issuing a non-transferable near shore permit to myself and wife, so that we can continue fishing. I might have another 10 years of fishing left in me. I certainly am not going to be catching 1,000 pounds a day like I used to. And I still have, I feel, a commitment to make to my local community to bring food, bring fresh fish out of their local waters back to them for them to enjoy and to eat. And that's what I've been doing all this time. So I'm hoping that you can find time to give me, to put me on another agenda so that I can come before the commission and explain this a little, probably a little more in depth if they would like. And I would hopefully be able to get this chance to have, like I said, a non-transferable deeper near shore permit just to, so that I can work whatever time I have left on the water in state waters where I have thousands and thousands of rocks that I have worked in the years, well, at least 1,000, maybe not thousands, but anyways. These places are out, they're all out of all that collection I've done over the years is no longer useful if I can't fish state waters. So I hope you would consider this. And I just want to take a second to shout out to Joanna and to Marcy. I hope they handed you out your capes by now, because you girls are amazing. And I almost miss the time we used to spend together at council meetings. Those wonderful long afternoons sitting in the meetings watching this happen. And happy to keep it going. So it's good to see you. And that covers what I can say today.
Thanks very much. Sherry, can you take us to our speakers online?
Our first speaker will be Captain Smitty, who followed by Merritt McRae. Captain Smitty, go ahead, please. You need to unmute. Captain Smitty, go ahead, please. Let's go to Merritt McRae while Captain Smitty figures out his tech. Merritt McRae, go ahead, please.
Good morning again, President Murray, Commissioner, staff, and indeed the listening audience. As a member of the Groundfish Advisory Subpanel for the Pacific Fishery Management Council, I will bring forward for analysis the proposal that the area between 36 North and Point Conception be considered for inside 20 fathoms fishery in the fall and closing that 50 fathoms and greater access that you've just approved. Thank you very much for your approval of that package by the CDFNW, by the way. I would also like to comment that this may result, if it models out well, in a very scary moment where there is actually no authorized fishery for a few months for the fall. And hopefully, you know, it would be before that fall season would start. What would need to happen, as I understand it, is that on the federal side, that greater than 50 fathoms portion of the season would need to close. And then the proposal for emergency action to open inside of 20 be brought forward to you at the state.
Test 1, 2.
Thank you.
Captain Smitty, go ahead, please.
All right, I'm going to try this again. Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead, please.
All right, I'm sorry about that. Technology and can be overwhelming with some of this stuff. First off, I would like to thank the members of the GMT and Marcy for allowing me to participate with in the meetings here and learn more. I'm sorry about the process and how to move forward with this. There's been issues with the assessments of stock here, specifically with the quillback. Quillback fish are a species of Sebastia that lives only in the rocks. And in northern the northern management areas here, all of our sampling are done by trawl and trawl surveys. It's impossible to get accurate counts on the stock, an accurate stock assessment on a fish that does not live in the areas where they trawl. These fish lives only in the rocky areas. I would ask that the state and both state and federal to start using more hook and line surveys, ROVs, similar to what's being done in Southern California, to get better stock assessments of these species, specifically the quillback. And the other part of this too is that with the stock assessment of the quillbacks for California are extremely inaccurate. And I know that we have to use the best data available for that. But we need to have more accurate data before we start doing stock assessments. The stock assessment that was done is based more on Oregon stocks than the California stocks. In that regards, there's a management line that I tried to propose back in 2000 for the use of Pedro Point. The stocks from the Farallon Islands north have abundance of the quillbacks, whereas the stocks, there's 25 miles between the Farallon Islands and the Deep Reef. For the Deep Reef and south, there's very little stock of the quillbacks. I have been fishing out of Half Moon Bay since 1984. And in that time, running CPVs, I personally can say that our vessels have caught less than maybe a dozen of the quillbacks in that period of time. So stock assessment, I think, is a major issue. And I would like to see the Pedro Point line used for stock assessments as well. Thank you.
That concludes the public speakers on this item.
Great. Thanks so much, Sherry. So I, if it's possible, in response to the comments that we heard out of Trinidad, I'd love to see if we might be able to get the department, maybe Dr. Schumann, if you'd be willing to circle back and follow up with that speaker and just learn a little bit more about that. That would be wonderful.
We do have his contact information as well, President Murray.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we're happy to do that, and I think we know where to find it. But if we don't, Commissioner Hostler-Carmerson will follow up.
Okay,
thank you so much.
That sounds great. And my understanding is on the quillback side of things, we are still working to get more data, I think that's about all we can say on that for now. Is that right, Dr. Schumann?
Correct. We're actively working with the stock assessors. That's the stock assessors out of the Northwest Fisheries Science Center to try to understand what their data needs are, try to support them as much as we can, not only for quillback, for the numerous other species of groundfish that are out there as well, because we don't want this to be the tip of the iceberg and want to make sure that moving forward, we have the best available data to inform our management decisions.
That's great. Thanks, Craig. All right. Well, fellow commissioners, any comments or thoughts before we adjourn for the day? This is our last agenda item of the day.
Nope. I just really appreciate the flexibility, and I want to publicly thank my executive manager, Miss Amy Atkins Kelly, for facilitating at Trinidad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for the nimble response to that. Well, with that, that concludes our agenda. So we will adjourn the March 26, 2024 Fish and Game Commission meeting for the day. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you, President Murray.